Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we'll be talking to Mr. Matt Katzer, the author of Securing Office 365, and he's also the CEO of Command IT, a leading cybersecurity firm with a focus on Microsoft 365 and Azure services. They're based in Portland, Oregon. Matt, thanks for your time, and let's go ahead and get started. I know that these are hot topics with people today, especially, you know, with cloud stuff and Office 365. So let's go ahead and get started.
Sounds good. Looking forward to being here.
Yeah, well, thank you. We looked at your bio. We always do an extensive background, not a background search. We do like a LinkedIn search, Google search on you. And you seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us some of the highlights of your career, please?
It's actually a lot of my career I worked for Intel. And in Intel, there's actually two sides of Intel. There's Intel and there's Intel Systems 2. Intel Systems 2 is basically a defense communication contractor for the feds. So I had two roles when I was working at Intel. One is doing communications and providing those services and support for clients in the corporate sector. And I had this other activity where I was actually doing the same, different style thing with a different set of products in the actually supporting the federal government and some of the agencies in the communication sector. So it was actually really fun, kind of weird at time, but it was really kind of, it was a fun, but that's really got started in the whole cybersecurity and communication, because I've always been kind of fascinating about this from even when I was a kid.
Okay. Now, am I saying the name of your company right? Is it Command or Command?
Command.
Command, okay. Well, it's, when did Command begin using cloud services?
Well, we started, it's kind of interesting because Command started in 98, and we're kind of an IT service firm, and we're doing products and had some retail products at the time. And along about 2009, we've always been really had a very tight relationship with Microsoft in terms of product development. And 2009, we got involved in the Microsoft kind of their cloud services and their airlift program for what they call the BPOS. That was had Microsoft had this really marketable name and very sexy name called Business Productivity Online Services, or BPOS. I don't know who ever thought about it. But that's where we actually got exposed to it. But what really happened with us is that we were involved in a kind of some next generation projects with Microsoft and actually working with the Intel Systems Group at the time. And what we actually did is that we were putting into offices small data centers. And the trend in these offices where everyone would be, they're on laptops, everyone's 100% mobile. So when they left the offices at the evening, they take all their computing equipment with them. So all that was left is this is the, you know, the systems infrastructure and the remote access equipment and everything else. And this is a project they started working with Microsoft. And as part of the outcome of the project, when because this is all kind of early release hardware and early release software, there is a big discussion about where the market was going, where the customers were going. And the whole programs on both the Intel and the Microsoft side was canceled because basically, and that's where the whole push for cloud services really began on from our involvement with Microsoft and also what we're doing then. I remember that date really specifically. It was around March 4th, 2010. And that's the date that we basically said that the world's changing and you need to pick your horse you're going to ride. You're going to either ride a Google horse or a Microsoft horse. And at that time, we decided that we're going to be Microsoft-focused, and that's what we decided to do. And the follow-on books is basically that we published are based on everything that we learned since then.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I'm segueing into that. I've noticed that you published three books in Office 365 with over, I should say, almost 300,000 downloads, you know, based on the A-Press and Amazon websites. That's quite an impressive amount. What motivated you to write these books?
Well, it's when we wrote the books were based on basically the notes from the field. And these are all trade books through A. Press Springer Publishing, and which is part of Macmillan family. And a lot of this was written because customers would not know what the cloud was or know how to do the cloud or didn't really understand. And we try to accomplish two things. We want to educate clients, but also educate our competitors and move everyone in the same direction because we all win. And the whole purpose of writing the books was to give people an idea what the cloud was, what the various technologies, and also give them a source where they could actually look at something and find a really good chance of getting it done right the first time. Because as you know, as you go through the web and everything else, is whatever's found on the internet must be real. But there's 100 different versions of what you're doing when you're finding for information. There need to be one source. And the whole purpose of writing the books was giving our clients and giving our competitors basically that one source you can go after. And it was really trying to just help us move the needle forward. Because we're really a believer in the cloud services and this, and moving your business to cloud and how you actually need to change the way you do things.
Awesome. Now, your latest book is all about securing Office 365. Why did you choose to write about that, or what motivated you to write that?
Well, it's securing 365. That was in some ways, a very difficult book to write. But it was an important book. And what happens is there's a lot of information out in the field, but there's a lack of information about what needed to be done. And you go check from this blog or this source, or you go some of the Microsoft sites and everything else would contradict each other. So when I put the book together, we look at our team, we talk about how we actually implement things in our client base and what we actually do. And I wanted to actually give a roadmap for how we do things as a way to actually get people started. So you're started in the right direction and you're doing the necessary things you need to do. You're putting the right monitoring pieces in place. You're putting the right, the technology pieces to make sure you have the right license mix and everything else so you can protect your business. Because it really is a business war right now, and you have to basically keep on top of it. And I wanted the information in one place and, make it available. And the ironic thing about it is that, from our standpoint, our core values of our whole business is based on transparency. And this is just another tool that we actually use to show our clients what we do and how we do it. And also our competitors too. So we actually move in the same direction because it's really what needs to be done in this industry.
Sounds awesome. Now, how did Camden become involved with Microsoft Cloud? Like, what made you choose that over like the Amazon Web Services? As we know, it's the other 800-pound gorilla, in the cloud hosting business.
Well, I mean, if you really look at it, when you look at like Amazon services, AWS and everything else, they actually incorporate like Microsoft technologies, and you're actually using Microsoft technologies on an Amazon hosting environment. And if you actually step back from that, because if you want to go looking at, if you do an Amazon remote desktop, for instance, or a remote desktop workstation, you're built off of Server 2012, the R2 bases. Or if you actually pick up some of the mail services, there's a back-end Exchange server in the background. Now, over time, those things are changing, but that's kind of the basis for it when you turn back the clock. If you look at what's going on in the environment, you do an open source version, roll your own, but you have really the two big providers for the fundamental technology is really Google and Microsoft. And everything's based on one of those two. Now, from a standpoint is that when Camden started, we were a product development company. We had a tight relationship with Microsoft, and we always had a product mentality is the best way to look at it. And when I look at Google, their business model is more about information reselling, and Microsoft's more about product. And we basically aligned ourselves with a product because we felt that's more what businesses want to do.
Okay. Now, how long has Camden been in business?
Well, we started in that's a good question. We started in 1998 as both a product and we had some IT services at the time. and a lot of different, we've been involved in a lot of different activities over the years and changes, and we have some a lot of intellectual property in terms of patents and copyrights and that we have in the market, trademarks, etc. But the really what I call in businesses, or every business reaches what we call inflection points. And our inflection point that we had when we changed our business model was back in that March 4, 2010, when we were doing that project with Intel and Microsoft, where we actually said that the world's changing from an on-prem world to a cloud world. And that's basically when we started making the change, and that's focused as a cloud company. And since then, Microsoft often refers us as a born-in-the-cloud company, because we basically rebirthed ourselves as a cloud company with no on-premise requirements.
Okay. Now, do you have a presence in other countries as well?
Yeah, we support our clients support. We have a number of clients in different states in the U.S., and right now our clients touch base. We touch clients in 11 countries, plus the U.S. In the U.S., I think the last count, we're in like 32 states where we actually have clients that we do business with. So we actually dealing with dealing with the compliance issues of how you actually handle data residency issues and everything else. We're just very much aware and deal with that on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. Now, who is your typical customer base that you're trying to target? Is it the SMBs, small and medium-sized business, the large companies like the Fortune 500, or is it perhaps a mix and match of both?
Yeah, I mean, this is a really good question. It's a combination, and the best way to describe it is that, you know, because we have customers in across different segments, but the best way to describe it is that there's a client life cycle that we actually follow. And depending on how we get involved with a client, depending if they're an SMB client, they're a Fortune 500, whatever, it's there are certain points in part of the life cycle they have different needs. Now, as a security supplier and a service provider, our core values, we don't have the requirements that we need to own everything in a business. Our objective in the business is to work with our clients through their life cycle and do the things necessary so our clients can focus on their IT services, at things that add business value to the organization, to the corporation, and handle those things that, you know, bad word, commodity, but handle those things that need to be done, but they may not necessarily have the resources to spend on them. You know, as an example, we'll have a new startup, an organization that will handle all the IT services as they grow to 100, 200, 300 people over a couple of year period. We'll slowly transition what we would do for managed services over back to them so it can manage those activities, and then turn it into more of licensing and security management as they transition, and we train them how to do some of the security management side. We transition that over into license management and handle their license management. And we provide a really – and this provides a lot of flexibility for businesses, because then they can control cash flow. They're not tied up into true up or some of the Microsoft license issues and expenses. And it's a win-win situation. It's a win-win business. And that's why we work with larger companies and we work with smaller companies. But it's a client lifecycle model that we follow.
Sounds awesome. Now let's dive deeper into your product and service line. I mean, it looks like that Camond offers the Microsoft 365, obviously, and Azure services with your lines in the Office 365 security services, the Azure security management services, advanced monitoring systems, migration services, as well as mobile device and mobile app development, or management, I'm sorry. Could you please elaborate more on these in more detail and how they're used in cybersecurity? And I mean, are these like downloads, or are they on cloud, or can they be on-prem, so forth?
And I think this gets back into a fundamental model that we have. Our clients that we manage, and we manage hundreds of them, is basically they have one thing in common. They're all on Office 365 and they're all on Azure and the Microsoft Cloud Azure. And because we're in that environment, we can actually get to a model where we can actually tailor the necessary subscriptions and security offerings tied to their business. you know, so example, as you run into different services, depending if you're education in our government sector or if you're, you know, commercial corporate, we can tailor the necessary subscriptions they need to have for the business risks that they're facing. So in case of like mobile device management or mobile application management, those are basically license options that users can use in terms of their 365 subscription services. And it's all about protecting the company data and protecting information, because that's really what we do when we talk about it. And when you actually integrate the 365 and the Azure services, you're actually integrating that on-prem environment and that cloud services you're tying together. And this is really super important because you get to a model where if a user has a mobile laptop or they have a phone or something like that gets lost and stolen or whatever, we have the ability to basically brick that system. And, you know, so there's no business data loss. And that capability is really fundamental to getting the right subscription mixes right for the users, and anyone can take advantage of these things.
Okay. Now, are you a Microsoft partner, and what does it mean to be a partner, and why should our audience really care about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I mean, in the Microsoft ecosystem, it's kind of, just step back for a second, is that as a Microsoft partner, there's different styles of partners. If it's a, you know, an IT service that says, yeah, I have a relationship with Microsoft, but I don't do any of the certification training, or I may do some training, or I'll have a, like in our case, we're a gold partner, and we're also into some other activities of Microsoft, some of the security programs and data center programs, et cetera. But what happens is that we're required as a kind of a top-tier partner to have the necessary training and to expend the resources on to train our staff and send them the training. We actually, for an IT company, we travel quite a lot, which is for training, which is really surprising to me. And also, it's the key thing. It's basically we have core certifications that require for us to do, and we're also required to basically invest in terms of Microsoft cloud services and everything else. These are support services for breach detection and leveraging resources. So those are the things that us as a partner have to do to be a partner. And there's an expense of time and cost that we have to maintain our staff to provide services for our customer.
Wow, okay. Now, in how many ways can a client purchase Microsoft licensing, and what does this licensing actually involve? Is it just like downloading Office 365, or is it like using all the server products? I mean, is it an all-encompassing term, or is it just specific to certain categories?
Well, I mean, there's four ways is that. When it's actually, there's a trial way that Microsoft has, and we offer trials on our website as well. So you can download server software, get the latest, do a 30, 60, or 90, or 100-day trials of different server softwares. The subscription software, such as 365 and some of the security products, you can actually download in 30-day trials and et cetera. Those are kind of the free ways to get into it, to see the try you like it. And when we actually look at the our book, we kind of put our book together to have to give you some guidance necessary to basically give you in the right direction. The actual purchase process, there really is three ways that you actually purchase it. You can either go, once you decide, you can either purchase it through a retail channel, like go down to, you know, Best Buy, go down to, you know, CDW Online, something like that, where you actually buy the full package product or buy a volume license keys on it. You can actually buy it direct on the subscription products, such as Office 365. You can buy it direct through like Microsoft. And you also go through partners, and either through a direct like us, we're a direct partner. So when we actually someone purchases a or we license a customer, we actually purchase the licenses and the Azure services directly from Microsoft, versus a indirect partner, which is another partner that's a lower tier than us, that would actually go through and purchase them through like a third-party distributor. And instead of like, this is kind of like in the commercial corporate world, we have like the the Tech Datas of the world, the Cynics, Ingram Micro, and in some cases you have Dell, and in some cases CDW does that as well for partners, for indirect partners.
Okay. Now, I was just wondering, Matt, do you have any Microsoft certifications yourself personally, or...
We have for ours as a business, we have 365 certifications for myself. We have Azure certifications, which constantly do. All our people are required to take certifications, and we actually pay for the exams, and which is highly unusual in our market. And as a business, we have also the gold competencies for Microsoft. Like, we have the Enterprise Mobility Competency Suites. We have the Azure, which is a cloud platform building Azure services. And also we also have the Productivities, which is the Office 365 and the different business classifications. We have a couple others. But we have those are basically because those are skills that we have, and we need those skills to basically help our clients.
Okay. Now, you made mention of a CSP. What exactly is a CSP?
Well, CSP is an interesting... CSP stands for Cloud Solution Provider. And what's going on in terms of the market, the license market, and this gets back into how Microsoft has evolved the license model. And to step back in the past, what Microsoft used to do is for larger companies, and this used to be anyone over 250 users, would be eligible or be kind of highly motivated to go into what we call the enterprise agreements. And these would be three-year agreements with true-ups so that you would use licenses or buy software, and then you have to true-up at a period and you pay it on yearly increments. As Microsoft has transformed the industry, when they did the cloud changed everything. And we became what we call the cloud solution provider, where we have the ability to offer the Microsoft services. You know, we do the same thing that CDWs, Adels were. We have the same, at the same price categories and everything else. We allow them to do subscription services. And we, in our case, we do them on a month-to-month basis, so businesses are not caught up in a true-up, so they can adjust their workflow. So if they hire a bunch of people for summertime work, and then they need to reduce their license mix and reduce their costs, and then when the winter comes on, they can actually do that with a CSP provider. So CSP is a class of Microsoft partners that allows license. We're a license provider, and we have different policies associated with it, and we have different security packages. We look at that. And there's really two types of CSP providers. I mentioned earlier we have a direct license provider like us, and we have indirect. And the main difference in the CSP realm is a direct license provider like us has usually an integrated cybersecurity offering, and they're part of it because we have requirements that we actually have to meet for that. And the indirect parties that actually go through a third party, such as a Tech Data or Ingram Micro, some of those, they actually leverage some of their third party services that do the same type of things.
Okay. Now, what is a managed Microsoft partner, and how is that different from being just a Microsoft partner like we just talked about?
Well, yeah, a managed partner is a class of partners where we basically have a direct Microsoft relationship where we have monthly cadence calls, we are involved in strategies, and we also have a managed partner. It's because we have a direct business relationship, but also we have an integrated service and security relationship with Microsoft when we purchase advanced security and purchases, for instance. And then the third part that we actually have is that we have access to Microsoft investment services. So we can actually do investment for funds on behalf of clients and deploying like security pieces. But one of the key things as being a managed partner, when we do this, we have this direct security relationship or this premier support partner relationship with Microsoft, is that in case we do, let's say we really have a serious security incident in one of our clients, we can actually bring in the Microsoft forensic teams. We have access into all the back-end cloud services, the new types of logs and everything else, and we can get down into the true nitty-gritty detail, what's really happening to the environment and everything else. And that's really, as a managed partner, And the case is that's the type of capabilities that you actually have, and you have those above and beyond. The indirect partners don't have that.
Okay. Now, what is the difference between a direct and an indirect partnership?
Well, you know, the direct partners, like I mentioned earlier, is they it's really the purchase, the way we actually acquire licenses. We acquire them directly with Microsoft, but we have security responsibilities associated with those that we provision. And so we have a it's for us, it's between like the client will contact us to purchase licenses and we'll provide them directly from Microsoft versus an indirect partner. The client will contact the partner and the partner will actually contact a third party supplier to actually provide the licenses and they'll go purchase from Microsoft. Or in some cases, those partners will contact us and we'll provide licenses to their end clients as well. But it's really that business relationship more than anything else.
Okay. I just want to ask a side question. It sounds like you got some really deep and close ties with Microsoft in terms of your partnerships. Are you involved in, like, in their Patch Tuesdays, you know, like releasing that out to your clients and so forth?
Yeah, I mean, we, in terms of how the patches get down, we're involved in a couple of different activities. We're involved in a lot of Microsoft Partner Advisory Council. So we have an idea what's coming down 3 to 6 months before it's released. We're also involved in some other advanced planning groups. And as a managed partner, we're also involved in early release of activities as, you know, for instance, one of the activities where that Microsoft recently released in the press is the Windows new virtual desktops. And then it has that rolls out in the tail end of this year. It's in beta preview right now. So we do those things as part of that relationship over time. You know, there's kind of a trust that builds up between our engineering team and Microsoft. And I mean, we actually have in our organization people that came from that have worked in the Microsoft DevOps organizations. So we have the relationships and everything else, and it's a trust of how we actually make the product better. Because we're all in this for the same thing, is how do we actually improve our client experience and how do we make it better, not just for us, but also for, in some cases, for our competitors as well. We're all in the same game, especially in the cybersecurity world.
Oh, yeah. Now, what is the Microsoft PI? It's an acronym, obviously, but what does it stand for?
Well, that's a really good one. Microsoft PI. It actually stands for a partner investment funds. And what happens as a direct partner, we have access into Microsoft business development funds. And depending on the market and depending on the direction the Microsoft wants to go or whatever, but also from our standpoint, we tend to use these to help our clients to basically invest in security, to beef up their security infrastructure, and have the activity from our engineering services and everything funded by Microsoft. And those are investment services, either through we do training, we do Azure onboarding, sometimes we do post-sales support. It's whatever to basically take the customers and get their environments necessary so they can actually defend their business and get their businesses to the next level. And so the business can grow. And Microsoft PI is a mechanism that we use to fund those activities to help our clients.
Okay, sounds cool. Now, as we know, mobile security, wireless security is probably one of the biggest hot button issue topics of today in cybersecurity. In fact, my last quarterly newsletter was all on mobile security. Just a broad question, I guess, answer it how the best you can. What does your company do for mobile security?
We do quite a lot. And to step back on mobile security, I mean, this gets into fundamental philosophy of, you know, doing Microsoft Cloud Service, but also our philosophy. Our philosophy are that laptops, PCs, mobile phones, they're throwaways. And that's fundamental the way we actually look at it. And it's really, when we talk about mobile device management, there's really two versions of it. One is mobile application management, mobile device management. And really the difference is that, and I get back into the throwaway device, is when you actually talk about application management, it's everything's today is about protecting the business data. Now, when you go and join an organization, you have your cell phone and everything else, and we call those a BYO, bring your own device. They'll have their own cell phone. And so what happens when a user brings those into a client that we actually manage in terms of our security offerings, we actually manage those through mobile application management. We manage all the business data. So we prevent the business data being from that's running on your Apple phone, for instance, for your iOS device, so they can't copy business data over into the Apple mail, or they can't basically, and so if something happens to that device, we can remotely remove all the business data. But, you know, you want to, as a business owner, I'm a business owner myself, is that you don't want to basically make sure you're going to remove the grandmother's pictures or the baby pictures on the person's cell phone. All we care about is protecting application data, the business data. When you look at the other part of this is mobile device management, these are for corporate-owned devices. At that time, you're managing a device where you're going to totally wipe out the device completely, brick it, whatever else you can do to it, wipe all data because a business owns it. There's no personal data on it. And so when you talk about mobile management or mobile security, that's really what we're talking about. We're talking about 365 and Azure. We integrate all those services in there. So, and it gets our fundamental philosophy that devices are throwaway and business, it's about protecting business data. And if you're running on a home environment with a business emails on it, we even have the ability to actually control information and wipe out business information in terms of like a home piece, in terms of home PC and configuration, and restrict it from being actually stored locally on the devices. That's mobile security today.
Gotcha. Now, what's the technical architecture that you use to support your mobile security model?
Well, I mean, the mobile security model, it's the best way to look at it is, and I outlined this in terms of the book, in terms of the security book that I published, but it's basically structured so that devices are integrated to the Microsoft Azure cloud. So everything's all integrated. It's all one integrated environment. And when you start integrating the terms of the user identity, for instance, because that's really what it's all about, you control user identity, you control information. And once you integrate that, then you can do all sorts of interesting things. So like if you're traveling, you leave your laptop in a hotel room and somebody steals it, the act of changing your password basically would set a motion in place where that device would automate when the person enters the password, tries to get your password, or if it's been blocked for access, it would automatically be bricked and totally useless. And that's why you see a lot of devices now on eBay and sold on eBay. They don't have drives in them or anything else, because once the drives get encrypted with some of the BitLocker and the new drive technology, you can't really unencrypt them. You have to basically rip them apart. So that usually doesn't happen because they're useless. But that's kind of the basis of it. It's based on the philosophy from an architecture standpoint that devices are throwaway, and devices are basically integrated all together into the Microsoft cloud. And when you take that approach, and then you have this holistic view, and you can control data and protect the corporate data. And that's what our job is.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, what is the difference between using Microsoft-based security tools versus third-party, perhaps like downloadable and open-source security tools?
Well, I mean, there's a philosophy in terms of the way we look at it. Is the way our view on stuff is that we look at MS has a holistic version, because we're basically, we deploy security pieces, we do the stacks. And then what we do, and we add like third-party tools, be it open source or some others that we acquire, we basically add third-party tools to augment for the business roles that we need to do. And so everything we have is an integrated solution. And that's really kind of important, because when you talk about integrated solutions, it's like how we do integrate data in our SIM. That's a security events, security indication event management. So we actually we integrate the information all together so we can have a holistic view of what's going on with threat alerts and everything else. And so we want to keep that model, and that's kind of what you do today. And when you do integrating tools, it's like if you want to go down the Splunk route, or if you go down like different types of some of the other third-party SIEMs, you look at different pieces. They'll have a holistic view that they want to deploy in their environment, and pretty much you'll have different things and vendors. We find that with us, we do the Microsoft because of in terms of the Microsoft holistic view aligns more in terms of the model that we have and what our customers want to do.
Okay. Now, the next question is a very hot button topic issue for me. We're going to be talking about Windows 10 here. Matt, I've had nothing but horrible experiences with Windows 10. I had a laptop. I got a very nasty malware on that 2 months ago, and I finally decided deep down to spend about $1,000 to get a new laptop, with the new protection and everything. I had the Geek Squad actually install everything, the antivirus and the updates there, because I have no patience with Windows 10, because on my work laptop, when I first got it, I had to do the first updates. I kid you not, it took like 7 hours for it to do all those updates. And there are a couple of clients in which I write their Microsoft patch updates for, every when it comes out on the Tuesdays. And the last one, I think, was like the worst ever for all the vulnerabilities in Windows 10. I mean, honestly, I have never... I don't mean to sound pessimistic or negative, I'm an optimistic person, but honestly, I just despise Windows 10, and every time I see updates shut down when you want to shut your computer down, I'm going, okay, am I going to be up for another 10 hours downloading patches or what? So what is the difference between like Windows 7 and what's changed with Windows 10? I mean, it just seems like it's just like the worst operating system that they could come up with, I mean, in terms of security, in my opinion.
Well, it comes down with philosophies is really when you look at it. And, all our devices, we don't have any clients that don't use Windows 10 right now. But all our clients are on Windows 10. They're on 19.03, which is the latest versions. But they also deploy the Microsoft Next Generation Antivirus and this is kind of the AI-based, all the AI-based tools is what everything we deploy. When you think about what happened in the world with Windows 7, it comes down to philosophy. In Windows 7 time frame, the philosophy was basically throw a desktop OS out there. Third-party folks would basically do the security patches and everything associated with it. When the philosophy, and that's kind of was the philosophy, so you had the semantics of the world, McAfee's and putting antivirus and everything else on it, because that wasn't job number one. In the Windows 10 timeframe, so there's a cultural transition. So things you could do in the Windows 7 environment, you can't do in Windows 10 because the security model doesn't allow you to do them. So there's things that don't work and things just don't break. But there still is a lot of compatibility in Microsoft. We're on a lot of compatibility task force to make sure the stuff goes from Windows 7 to Windows 10. And there's very little stuff that really doesn't work. In the Windows 10 environment, what's happened now is that job number one for Microsoft is that basically job number one is to make it the most secure OS. Now, when we deploy our customers, you get into the Windows 10 environment. There's really three operating systems in Windows 10. There's Windows 10 Home, there's Windows 10 Pro, and there's Windows 10 Enterprise. Most people, when you go to like Best Buy or Geek Squad, you buy in Windows 10 Home. So and what happens is Windows 10 Home is designed for not to be in a corporate environment, be a small, and basically you add on other things. It's defined for a totally different segment. When you take that system and basically push it into more of a corporate environment or more in structure, you're putting more additional security features on it. You need to actually change the OS from Windows 10 Home to Windows 10 Pro. Like in Arc, and that basically, suddenly when you go to Windows 10 Pro, new security features are added, new capabilities and new hooks are put in place so you can actually do the next generation antivirus tools and everything else. And what we do
with our deployment, we actually deploy systems and we actually take those and we do a digital license upgrade and we actually move them to Windows 10 Enterprise. And what that really means is that the Windows 10 system is running into like a virtual machine is the best way to describe it. And so all your security credentials are actually hidden from the actual OS. So your ability to get malware is reduced and everything else. And also when you add the AI tools, you're synced into all the attacks and threats that go into the, in terms of what Microsoft calls a threat graph, and things totally change. So like in, so it really comes down, you start looking at where, what hard, and Microsoft has done a very poor job in terms of explaining the differences. And I wish they would actually kill Windows 10 Home. But in maybe one of these days it will happen. But as they go through and you look in terms of business environments, as you, as we take our environments, if we have our clients, they're all in Windows 10 Enterprise. And we manage them that way because then we have the holistic security. But also we basically look and when you talk about the security tools and the next generation tools, the AI tools today that we actually use and use to defend the environments, they basically look at where's the code execution coming from? Where is that download coming from? How is that ransomware blocked? How do we actually relay that? And how do you actually make sure it doesn't affect the rest of the organization? That's how we manage environments. And that's really the difference. So, yeah. And sometimes you get a point when you take an upgrade from Windows 7 to Windows 10, what you really want to do is basically flatten the machine and just put a Windows 10 Pro on it and go from there. And then you have to keep the updates because it is a battle.
Right. Hey, do you want to manage my Windows 10 laptop? I'd be more than happy for you, Matt, to manage that for me. I just have no patience with it. Seriously, it's just, but you know, hey. Actually, my favorite OS, believe it or not, was actually the Windows XP. I thought that was like the most straightforward and easy, but that's my opinion. Anyway, hey,
it leaked, you know, like a sieve, too.
Yeah, don't charge me too much. But yeah, if you want, you can remotely manage my desktop, you know. But anyway, so basically, we're seeing a lot of news about the Office 365 accounts being phished, hacked into, and blah, blah, blah. And how do you protect email services, and what should users do to prevent these phishing attacks? I mean, one could do a simple Google search on how to, you know, protect yourself from a phishing attack, but what tips can you recommend that are actually different from what people would see from doing a Google search?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's really a couple things you need to do. First of all, you have to make sure you get the right security subscriptions added to your Office 365 subscriptions. And I need to separate and talk about something really quick. There's, in the Microsoft world, there's consumer subscriptions and there's commercial subscriptions. So when you go to, let's say you go to Best Buy and you buy the Office 365 software, you actually are buying, 9 times out of 10, you're buying something in the consumer segment. When you go to the, when you go to like us, for instance, we actually provision things in the commercial segment. Now, price-wise, they're almost the same. So it's, and hopefully I think in 2020, I think they're going to see more, probably a mix of the two together. So what happens is that when the commercial like businesses, or, you know, even if the user buying a commercial 365 subscription, you need to add the necessary security options to it. And there's some different security options, like there's, you know, prevent kind of the, some of the phishing attacks. It's the Office 365 threat protection software. There's business combination suites that are designed with the, and what the, that basically designed to intercept the email that comes in, go walk through the URLs and explode them, verify if there's a bad actor or something like that, and basically block that to your PC. So some of that Microsoft does in the basic subscriptions, but more the advanced features and the security is done as more in the security options. And that's one step. You have to get the right pieces on it. The second piece is you have to do training. Be it through using, there's a couple of different suppliers like KnowBe4, for instance, or Breach Secure, and even the Microsoft phishing tools on the commercial one, you can actually simulate phishing attacks to your users. And you have to train them what it should be look like and everything else. And then the other aspect of it is the what we call the security configuration and monitoring. So a lot of our customers, when we do like when we deploy like security enhancements, we get the Microsoft investment funds. We will actually go configure their environment, and we'll do things like putting common signatures in place. So it doesn't matter if you email from, you know, doesn't matter from Outlook, from your phone, from your webmail, they all have a standard signature. And if you go log in 365, you have a customized home page that you actually see. And you start training users on what to look for. So there's a lot of education. And then the other aspect is a common one with the you have this capability with some of the with the retail subscription, but it's also the advanced one is you have to deploy what we call multi-factor authentication. You know, so this means that when you log in the site, you get like a you get like an alert on your phone, you get approval to log into the site. So you have to do this multi-step. That's how you actually prevent it. That's how you stop this stuff. And, you know, like, think yourself today. You have your iPhone or you have your Android. Yeah, you're going to use your thumbprint and you're going to use your type in your PIN code or something like that to get access to your phone. And yet we run into people that don't want to do that when they actually log in their cloud services. And it's just you have the same problem. And that's how you stop it. And that's how you prevent it. And that's one of the things why when I wrote the security book on 365, you know, I try to put all the information in there to give people guidance to kind of what you should do. So we just move so we can move people ahead to just protect themselves because it's vicious right now.
Yeah, I mean my next quarterly newsletter, it's all about phishing. Although phishing remains like one of the oldest forms of cyber attacks, it's still used prevalently by the attacker, both so many new variants of it coming out. It's really scary. Now, if I already have an existing Office 365 support or support team, how can I use your services?
Well, I mean, it's very simple. We have the way we structure is that we really have three different services that we have. We have one that's designed for entry level, give you the basic things necessary, set up your encryption, set up some of the things you need to do to get people to get things right, get the signature, some of the other security testing that we actually provide. So we have a plan for that. We have also with an IT organization that has an existing IT services, we have a plan that's really designed to handle the management and monitoring, make sure all that's put in place, but let them do some of the remediation. We tell them what they need to do, but sometimes organizations have their own policy and procedures, how they want to do it, but we give them a second set of eyes. And then we have our higher end plan for more of the risk folks. And these folks are basically we're in the groups that we do in the security we have hunters that we look at what if scenarios, we look at the history of various attack and penetrations, we look at what the trends are, and we're also involved in terms of the Microsoft Expert Network, where we can actually look into the Microsoft cloud, see what goes on and bring those capabilities back in so we can actually protect our clients. So it really depends what the organization wants to do and what their capabilities are.
Gotcha. Now, obviously, I'm now a brand new Office 365 home user with my new computer. So far, so good. Everything's been working with my new laptop and Windows 10. Where do I go to find out more on how to beef up my Office 365 security? I know that Microsoft has their patch, their Patch Tuesdays, as we've talked about. And they have their TechNet site, which I've used before. But are there any other resources that are available that someone can glean information off of, quick glance without having to sift through a lot of other, noise to see what they need or what they want to read about?
Yeah, I mean, there's two locations you can go to. One is docs.microsoft.com. That's the one you want to go through all the latest information. And we also look in our 365 book, for instance. It's somewhat technical. We have some things on the blogs. But also specifically for like your case as a small business user, you really need to be on like one of the corporate subscriptions, like the Microsoft 365 Business, which has all the necessary security hooks and everything else in it. And it's, you know, for what you're actually paying for your 365, it's like, there's different promos, but it's like $6 or $7 more a month. And you pick up tons of stuff that's tailored for small businesses. And that's kind of what our recommendation would be.
Okay. Now, in the cybersecurity world, we're hearing more about like the use of SIEMs or security incident event monitoring tools for monitoring. Do you offer those to your customers?
Yeah, we actually, what we use is we use Azure Sentinel as our SIEM. This is a new SIEM that Microsoft's introducing. For those in your listeners, SIEM is a security incident event monitoring package. And what this does, and since our environments are wholly integrated, we actually pull in the firewall logs. We pull in the logs from the switches and everything else. And we put all of those into the Microsoft, and we pull off the data from the Windows 10 systems, the different types of accesses are happening from the Windows servers environments. And in some cases, if you have Linux boxes, we have necessary tools, agents to pull stuff. We roll that into this Azure tool called Azure Sentinel. And then we run a what-if scenarios on it. So we see the breaches, we see the attacks that are going into it. And I'm looking at ours today, and it's like even in our environment, we have like 600-700 attempted breaches into our own environment today. And, you know, we constantly look at those things and we say that, okay, is there a trend going on? And that's what we actually use. And it's fully integrated into the environment, which is really nice. That's what it makes it, and it keeps the cost under control. Because things like SIEM get expensive, especially due to Splunk and everything else.
Sure. Now let's segue back to your company, to Camden. Do you have any customer success stories or any testimonials that you'd like to share with us for our audience?
Yeah, we have some there posted on our site. Some of the security ones, people don't like to talk about them, but I can kind of give you some overhead of kind of what we have done and what we has happened. We have like one instances of one of our clients, for instance. It's a fairly large client of ours that does that tons and tons of transactions. And what we actually have in their environment is that we actually went through, and because we deployed our SIEM environment, deployed some of the other security things and everything else, we actually had a detection, a breach that was coming in, and inadvertently so. And this is actually interesting because this one didn't come through an email, but it came through a penetration. And it came through, what happened is that someone ended up downloading like a third-party application from a reputable supplier. And it actually came into the environment. Our tools were able to catch it. We were able to block the pieces out of it. And we actually did the forensic and transact. It seems that the website that they actually downloaded from was breached. And the tool was actually, the Trojan was actually added into the breach, into the vendor, which was a reputable vendor. So, you know, that's how vicious these things are, because you have to put the tools in place and you can't just trust them because everything is being attacked. In this case, we're able to address it. We can find what the issues are. In the what we call the corporate environments, there's something known as lateral attacks. That's where you actually would go into like a particular node in a system, and you breach that, and you would solely walk node to node in the environment. And the tools we put in place in terms of how we monitor and attack it is we capture that, we block it, we stop it, and we also apply the necessary penetration patches to make sure it can't go from system to system, and then we remediate it.
Okay. Do you have any like free trials or free risk assessments you offer to potential clients before you onboard them?
Yeah, well, it's the 365 subscriptions are, we offer 30-day subscriptions for the 365, and you can put the, you know, all the threat management tools in place. You can put the, you know, the Office tools, Windows 10 tools. On the once you get to the point that you actually are saying you want to go through and basically deploy something, this is kind of why I wrote a book, because there's a lot of engineering effort associated with it. Yeah, we have wizards that turn things on, the free tools, but to actually go through and do what you need to do to actually get in place, you actually have to follow what I outlined in the book. But this is where our Microsoft Pi investment comes, because what we do is we actually will work with the client and then basically come through and say, okay, let's go through and put a proof of concept in place, have it funded by Microsoft through the Pi investments, and basically have you go experiment and see if this is going to work in your environment to make sure there's a zero cost for the clients. So we have environments like that. So it really depends what makes business sense.
Okay, now let's kind of segue back into the cybersecurity landscape in general here. Does the federal government make use of your products and services? In fact, I just wrote a blog posting on an audit report that two centers put together, and there are like 8 federal agencies that are at huge security risks. In fact, they had security vulnerabilities going on for 10 years plus, and nobody even bothered to look at it. So are they a client of yours? Do you provide any advisory services to the feds as to how they could improve their own security?
Yes, we do. We actually, you know, our client base, we have clients that are government contractors, and so we're indirectly involved in that. And we also have some federal and state agencies that we work with as well. And to understand the Microsoft environment, there really is, you have what we call the corporate environment, we call a 365 company, someone that's on a 365 organization with Microsoft at tenant. And there is a corporate version of those, and there's two types of government versions. There's a, what we call a GCC, which is Government Community Cloud, and there's also High GCC, and there's also a third one, the DoD GCC. So there's different levels of security and management monitoring. The tools that we actually use in the 365, the tools are across the board. So the monitoring techniques and the technologies and everything else that you use, it doesn't matter if you're into the corporate or the GCC or GCC High, you do the same things because you're using the same tools. So indirectly what we're doing is the tools and techniques we're using and how we work with some of our DoD contractors, we actually train them to do the necessary things, and we actually help them monitor. Because we're very much one thing about Kamen, our philosophy is we're very transparent. We're very much about educating clients as well of ourselves of how to actually take care of things. But it's really a lot of the things today, it's basically there's things that you need to do because it's a very vicious world, and it's people are actually – data security incidents are happening because people are basically trying to resell information for money. It's a business.
Right. Well, no, that's awesome. I think that you're so open and transparent. I mean, there's some vendors I've talked to, they are so closed-lip about what they do. And once they sell their service to a customer, that's it, they just kind of like walk away. But it's so refreshing to hear that you have the openness and that transparency with your customers. I think that's great. Now, another hot button topic issue for this year is C-suite. Now, the idea is, okay, if an organization is hit, let's fire the CIO or the CISO. Now, ultimately, the buck has to stop with someone. It's going to have to be someone at the top. Now, I see both sides. I don't think a CISO should necessarily be fired immediately, but at the same time, I think everybody in an organization is accountable to hold their own for security and securing their company. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I agree with you. And what we actually see is that it's a lot of what happens. And the best way to describe it is go back, and I hate to use the automobile industry as an example, of the automobile industry would go through and say, well, you know, if we need to go replace this screw with screw B, it costs us 0.02 cents more. And the risk factor of that actually breaking in the environment is this, and that will cause X number of accidents, so our business liability is that. And that's the mentality of the C-suite. And you look at it today, and that's kind of the bad mentality, because it's risk averse. And they were saying that, well, yeah, I can go spend $100,000 or $500,000 and beefing up our security with different subscriptions, but my risk is this. And the cost of the risk is usually in the past, it's always been lower than the expenses. But that's the problem. That's the mentality that has to change. What's going on today is that, and the C-suite needs to really internalize it, that it's businesses attacking businesses to steal information and resell intellectual property. And it doesn't matter who you are. In businesses today, your assets are your digital assets. And you have to protect them just the same way you're going to protect your facilities and everything else. And you have to have the same mentality. And there's a cost associated with it. And it's not free. And that's the part that has to change. So when you talk about, and usually what happens when the CISO gets fired or something like that, it's because the CEO is embarrassed because they didn't want to spend the extra $1,000 to go fix the problem. We ran into a situation where the C-suite didn't want to spend like the extra, you know, it would cost them like $20,000 a year, but it was, they end up costing them $500,000 breach, a security incident, and cost them $500,000 in terms of losses. And all they had to do was willing to spend the extra, but they didn't see the value behind it because they didn't internalize their digital assets at the company. And the people that need to be fired is really the CEO that made the business decision not to protect the digital assets. That's where the buck stops.
Well,
so I'll get off my high horse for a little bit, though.
No, I appreciate that because I asked this of all my podcast guests, and I have a lot of differing answers on this. But this brings up another interesting point is that with the C-suite, traditionally their way of thinking was that, I have $100,000. I'm going to buy 20 routers with that or firewalls. And with that, I'm going to have the best layer of defense possible. And that, and I think the idea of spending a lot of money and being large in your security in terms of quantitative approach is starting to shift now because I think they're starting to realize a little bit by bit slowly, that simply deploying 10 routers and firewalls doesn't guarantee that you're going to have great security. In fact, it's just increasing the attack surface for the cyber attacker, whereas it's probably better to think strategically, and maybe 3 firewalls are better than 10, but they have to be placed at the best locations. So there is some kind of shift in thinking in that with the C-suite as well, too, I believe. So.
You're absolutely right. And there's one point that needs to change in the environment is when you think of security today, and when you think of ComSec, and I'm a ComSec guy. Traditionally, it's been you protect the business environment, you protect the physical security. Nowadays, if you look at what we call that the ComSec, the computer security boundary was like the facility. And if you're outside, you're a lower class. And if you're inside the building because you've been vetted going inside and so on. What's happening today is computer security is all around identity management. And identity management is around the user and what the user uses. And you have to the ComSec boundary is the user identity in the devices that they use. That's what has to be protected. You have to take that mentality on it.
Right. Now, the next question, I don't mean to get political. And, we all have our political beliefs and views, obviously. We keep hearing about nation state threat actors like North Korea, China, the Russian meddling, the Mueller report, so forth. What are your thoughts on that? It seems like, Trump's coming out with something new every day that's causing new waves in the cybersecurity industry. Now, I think he's done some good things. I think there are 2 bills that he signed. I don't remember them off the top of my head. But I know that he signed something to help, small businesses get more access to more resources to secure their lines of defense. What are your thoughts on this, on, these nation-state threat actors?
Well, it's like anything, you get down to what's really what the talk, the root cause. And what it is organization A is attacking organization B to get digital assets and resell those digital assets. And it doesn't really matter if you think of nation states as the old thing. You have state run actors, but a lot of times the state run actors are going to contract it out to a third party to go do something. And what the third party is the business that is involved in doing those things and reselling their services and capability to the people that want to pay for it, just like they sell the information, because you're talking about selling information. And businesses of all type. If it's a, you think about a nation state actor, you think of, or get it down to, you know, a business, or, you know, they're out to basically penetrate another organization to get information to resell it to the highest bidder, be it under contract to a state-run organization, or be it to the dark web. I mean, it is a business that attacks another business. And what users need to really think about, you see the, you see all the political stuff and people will spend how they want to spend. But, you know, you're, when you get right down to it, it's all about money. That's what everything comes down to. You just, what was the saying is that to find out where the crime is, just follow the money. And this is where all this stuff is looking, because it's like, if a nation state's going to attack a DOD partner, they're probably after trying to get a certain widget on it so they can actually save a couple million dollars in terms of their investment of the widget when they build in their own industry. So it's basically, and that's what's kind of driving it. And you look at, now you look at what's been done in terms of federal government, there's been some changes here in the States in terms of the new requirements in terms of the DOD contractors, that in the past it'd be the DOD contractors had to say, yes, sign a bunch of forms and yes, I certify myself that I'm supposed to be, you know, DFARS compatible and everything. I met all the requirements and blah, blah, blah type stuff. Now you have to actually prove that you've done it. And we're seeing bills that come through for, from DHS saying that for organizations that are receiving federal funding, you better put the necessary, you know, the NIST 800-171 protocols in place to basically make sure you're doing the necessary things. And it doesn't really matter if you're a, you're a Defense Department contractor anymore. You could be an entity that receiving federal funds. You have to do certain things to protect your digital assets. I think that's actually a very positive thing that's happened. It's just that people haven't internalized the why. And as we get more of those things in places, I think that it's all going to protect everything. But it's kind of a, it's a very interesting thing, but it's really, you got to follow the money, because it's basically, that's where the root, that's what's driving a lot of the stuff.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, just one more question about your company. What are your general plans for expansion? Do you plan to offer new product services, or go after bigger, different kinds of clients, or just deepen your relationships with Microsoft or all three? How do you plan to expand Camond?
Well, we're a very focused partner. All our clients are 365 and Azure based, and we are constantly adding new clients. There's clients like will come to us and we'll manage their licenses for them. We'll add security products if they need it. It's really trying to figure out what works for them. And in terms of our expansion and what we do is we're also in the Microsoft, what we call the one channel partner catalog for our security products. So they can be easily added into a client's environment, and we can actually put them into that. So we have a lot of flexibility to expansion, but our aspect is that, yeah, we're niche to 365 and Azure, but we do a really, really good job on 365 and Azure.
Gotcha. Now, how do you foresee the cyber threat landscape changing, evolving, and based from your experience in cybersecurity, what's that one threat going to be here in 2019?
I think this is the – it really comes down to it's accepting that it's a business that's attacking businesses. And it doesn't matter who you are, because – If I'm a business and my objective is to basically go collect information from, I'll just pick a company from, let's say Ford, whatever. What I'm going to do as a business, I'm going to go through and research what they done on LinkedIn, who the people are on LinkedIn, what people they associate. I'm going to go find out who are the people are in the supply channel. I'm going to go through LinkedIn. I'm going to look at Pinterest. I'm going to look at Facebook and collect all the information, develop a profile. As a business, it's like when you think of a business doing new client acquisition as we go through and do lead generation or something like that, I'm doing the same services going after a particular target in a company. And what I'm trying to do is get through third parties to me, introduce them so I can lower my risk to get access into the environment. That is what's going on. And so when you talk about the social engineering, the social management, and the whole attitude is that you, it's basically, it's happening to people. And in comedy, the ex-director director of FBI said, is there's two businesses in the world, those that's been hacked and those that don't realize they've been hacked. But it's a social engineering, it's going to get worse, and you're going to see it basically in droves when people don't do the necessary investment to protect things.
Gotcha. Now, I want to throw in just a couple of extra questions here. We know that the Internet of Things, the IoT, is now going to become like a big thing here in the coming years, the Internet of Things, where everything's all connected together. You know, like literally, like you clap your hands, your oven door opens, or your car starts, or, you know, what have you. To me, I find this very scary with all this interconnectedness. I just think it's more attack service for the cyber attacker. Have you dealt with the IoT with your services, with like with Microsoft Azure, or you plan to deal with the IoT here in the future? Or?
Yeah, we have actually some clients that provide IoT services and everything else, and we're working with them on the Azure integration. A lot of it's going to come down to it's like anything else. You got to have trusted suppliers. There's going to have to be trusted standards how you do things. You know, and there's going to be changes. I mean, it even gets down to like the classic is the badge readers. You know, sometimes people have badge readers. You know, for convenience, organizations will upgrade their badge reader system, but they'll have it downward compatible with the old badges. Well, we know the old badges are already been hacked, so by actually having compatible, it doesn't really mean you upgrade the new stuff. It's basically you still have the same security loopholes. What happens is it's kind of awareness, and you have to realize that this is a – when you look at IoT devices, and I think the change that's going to – that needs to happen is that it's an ever-changing environment. It needs to be – you're going to have trusted provider you're going to be dealing with, and you're going to have to get in the mindset – of upgrading necessary equipment and electronic interfaces to make sure you're current. I mean, good example is that when you look at, we run this case and some are, you know, come across some PCs. How many people are using their old brick phones from 5 years ago? But they'll still have their old PC or they still have their old Wi-Fi from 5 years ago. You can't do that anymore. Those days are gone.
Now, earlier in our show, you had mentioned about multi-factor or two-factor authentication. Do you use biometrics for that? Because I know, like, for the iPhone, you know, like for the iPhone 5 and above, they've used, like, Touch ID and Face ID. I was just curious if you've implemented, like, any sort of facial recognition or iris or fingerprint technology with your services.
Yeah, we do. We use it across the board. We use biometrics, and it gets down to when you talk about security, there's three things, there's three rules of something being secure. It's something you know, something you are, something that you have. So it's something that you know, like a PIN code or a password. There's something that you are, like a biometric or a fingerprint, and something that you have, like a physical device. So you got those three things in the classic security model, then you're considered, you know, a trusted entity. And what's going on in the environment when you do biometrics now, and you kind of keep in mind like biometrics like Windows Hello or the PIN or the face code, the fingerprints in your phone, those are basically local things to the device that generate a security key that's integrated into a third-party service. So your biometrics don't get passed over to the third-party service. It's really the secure hash that gets passed over. But the way things are going and the way the environment is and for all our clients and with the latest, when you do the latest, the computer security advisories, all our security clients, you will be on a multi-factor authentication. And oh, by the way, it's not just PIN code. It's not just an SMS code. You'll use an authenticator app because most people haven't internalized that the SMS codes, there's like five suppliers of SMS in the world, and one of them is a bad actor that resells it. So that's why you have the T-Mobile getting hacked, the Verizon getting hacked, and SMS is no longer secure. That's why you do federal stuff. You have to rerun either Google or Microsoft Authenticator on your phone, and you're going to use, and that's the type of environments that you're going to have, and you have to change. Everybody has to change what they're doing, and biometrics is just one part of it.
Right. Now, finally, Matt, as we wrap up our show now, I just want to ask you one final question. This is probably one of the most important questions of all. I get asked this, and I ask all my what are those top two or three or a few things that you tell people or businesses as to what they can do best to protect themselves from a cyber hack or cyber attack?
Well, I mean, it really is, it's really, there's three things. Is that, one is that, yeah, we're on the, we're the micro, we're a Microsoft camp, so our answer obviously is going to be put in 365 and Azure services. That's where your mail services and security stuff is going to be. But basically, what the users need to do is pick their poison, be it the, be it whatever is going to be their email services supplier they want to use. They got to pick the thing and basically go all in to what the security service is associated with that. There is really no other choice because you can't afford it. That's number one. Number two is that, and this is the change that's happening, is that you have to be in the mindset of you're going to have to, I know you have some negative feelings about Windows 10, but the reality today is you want to be on Windows 10. You want to make sure your service packs are all updates. You want to be on the professional version or the enterprise version if you're on the corporate subscriptions. And then the other aspect that you need to do is that when you're on the corporate subscriptions for the Microsoft, you have to do the security subscriptions. And then you have, and then the, for organizations, you're going to have to train your employees what's a phishing email and everything else, and basically make sure you go through it. And if you do those things, you're going to eliminate 90% of it. And oh, by the way, if you're not using a multi-factor authentication to get access to your email on your laptop or log in to a service that does it, you better be doing that as well, because that's just the way, that's the way the world is turning.
Okay. Does Office 365 have like a password manager that comes with it that you can download for free or anything, or it's a separate component?
There's a, on the Azure services, there's a password manager. In terms of password managers, there's different philosophies on it. There's a couple really good ones. Keefer, for instance, is a really good password manager. There's a, you don't want to use any of the, some people will download a password, a free password manager from open source or something like that. You don't want to use those. In fact, if you use those on 365, they won't work because all the passwords been hacked. And the encryption's all been hacked. You're going to have to pick a, in the Microsoft one, there's a password keeper on the Azure side for businesses. But also, if you're looking for business, your phones and everything else, things like password, you want to pick a reputable one that makes sense. On the MSP side, there's, we use Passportal MSP is one of them. There's a couple different ones that are kind of, and you're going to pay money for them that you'll use.
Okay. Well, Matt, we thank you very much for your time this afternoon. I know we've had a pretty, I think we had a wonderful podcast. Thanks for your time, and we look forward to hopefully having you again as our guest.
I look forward to it. I'm glad I answered your questions, and, you know, if your users have information that, you know, please see our website at www.cama.com and just pop us a question, and we can get back to you and find out what we can do to help people to move the needle forward. You know, it's sure. It's really vicious. You have to change the mentality, and it's all about protecting your identity and information that you have.
Gotcha. Thanks for your time, Matt. Have a wonderful weekend.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.